arguably the most recognisable footballer in the world. Yes! Yes for England!
To have the cheek, the audacity, and the ability to finish it off like this, I'll take a bow shot. That's brilliant.
Hello everyone and welcome to the first rumours.co.uk review podcast of the weekend's games and the main talking points. I am your host, CTR, and my co-host on this is Daryl. Welcome, Daryl.
Hello, thank you very much.
And we'll be talking about the game. So first of all, let's start at Upton Park. Chelsea didn't cause an upset, as many might think they might have done. West Ham going ahead first with Zarate before Chelsea had Nemanja Matic sent off, at which point they equalised in the second half, which were only then lost because Andy Carroll came up with a header inside the box. Actually, the sixth header Chelsea have conceded this season, which equals the amount they conceded last season. So, Daryl, overall, West Ham deserved to win the game, didn't they?
Yeah, definitely. Much the better team. Chelsea were over the place. West Ham looked like they had a game plan. And then executed it pretty well, to be fair, I think.
I agree. I mean, I don't think West Ham had to actually play that well to win the game. I think that would be the worrying point for Chelsea in all this. They seem to be playing a lot of players out of position as well. I mean, they've got the £25 million left-back that we're told that they signed in Barbar Ratman, and I haven't seen him play yet. They seem to be, well, Azpilicueta's playing at left-back, and they're putting Zouma at right-back, who's a centre-back. It just doesn't make sense. What do you make of that?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. It just seems strange that you'd want to shuffle your deck around that much, knowing that you're going for a bit of a period where you're conceding a lot of goals. You'd think you'd want to start from the back strong and then look to build on that, really. Stop the goals going in before you look to start scoring them.
I agree. I mean, you've got to have some sort of stability in the team. I mean, if you start playing your right-back at right-back instead of left-back, well, then you're not really going to have a problem. He should be able to deal with that. I mean, he's a very good left-back, so his natural position, he should be a very good right-back. You don't spend £25 million on a left-back and he's not ready. I mean, this is the thing that Mourinho's been saying recently, is that Barbar is not ready for the Premier League yet. Well, I'm sorry, if you pay that amount of money for a left-back, he should be ready to come in. And I think the fans are they should have more than enough right to ask a question about where is this left-back that they've signed. But let's talk a little bit about West Ham here. I thought that, like I said, I don't think they had to play brilliant to get the result at all. I think they executed a game plan, like you said, very, very, very well. They've got some very good players now. I particularly like that Coyote and that Zarate. He's from... where's he from? He's Argentinian, isn't he?
It's Lanzini.
Lanzini, that's the one. But Zarate is also the other. He's also the other Argentinian. Great goal. Did you see the goal?
Yeah, I did. No, it was a very good goal.
Good corner, worked out. And a little bit suspect with Begovic getting beaten the way he did there. I thought he came through a lot of bodies. And I suppose you could ask the defenders as well to make the clearance at some point in that move as well. But nonetheless, a very good clean strike. And always a strike I like to see anyway.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Well, at the moment, obviously, Chelsea have got a few injuries. They're struggling along. You've got Courtois out. He, believe it or not, his red card was the third one they've conceded this season. And obviously, that leads us into Matic. What did you make of the two yellows?
Yeah, no, well-deserved. No need to be making them sort of tackles, really. He had cover, especially for the second one, and just seemed intent on trying to make a point of, I'm going to go back and win the ball. And then, needlessly, he got himself booked, to be fair, in the process.
Yeah.
And all he had to do was keep the man out wide. He wasn't really looking like he was going to do anything spectacular from that position on the pitch. And it's a position on the pitch you shouldn't be getting yourself sent off for, I believe.
And you've also got to trust your defenders to be able to deal with the situation coming at them afterwards, haven't you? There is an element of being able to trust your back four and not make that challenge. He doesn't have to make that challenge. I mean, the first one I thought was just daft. He had cover. He had more than enough cover coming around. Matic, to me, he's in really bad form at the moment, and I tend to think he's a very proactive defensive midfielder. He nips in front of the ball. He's very much like a Lucas for Liverpool. At the moment, he's almost being reactive to situations, and maybe that comes down to attacking players before, where they were first thought was to defend, keep their shape. They're now not running that 5 yards to close the man down, which is allowing West Ham then to build up a play, and Matic is basically caught out.
But in theory, that's the thing that they should be doing, because that's what Mourinho's criticised Hazard, especially of not doing, and that's the reason why he'd left him out of the game previously, because he wasn't doing his defensive duties.
Yeah, Hazard's a strange situation now. I don't quite know what's going on. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I can't see a possibility where they both last the season or start next season, that's for sure. I just can't see it. He just doesn't look the same player under Mourinho. And this is a player Mourinho lauded at the start of the season, saying he's there with Messi and Ronaldo, and he's not showing it at the moment, that's for sure.
It's a player that you've got to build your team around, and he hasn't seemed to show the commitment to do that. Or if he has, then you have to give him that free role where he can express himself and not be commanding that he gets himself back every 5 minutes.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And the thing with Hazard is he has obviously got aspirations to be one of the best players in the world.
Yeah, he's got the potential as well, too.
He's certainly got the potential. And under Mourinho, is one player allowed to thrive in a system, or is it more built around the team thriving as a team unit rather than one player? Does he allow one player to be the off-the-cuff player, if you like?
Would that then contradict himself, as in, does he want to be the main person for Chelsea rather than any player?
I don't know. I don't see him as the type of player that... I don't think he's kicking up too much of a fuss. There's plenty of players out there, I think.
Does Mourinho not want a team where he's got a player that is the main man for the team?
Oh.
Does Mourinho want a team that's built on a team-based
players, so then
he can then take the plaudits for everything that they do right, rather than Chelsea go and win the league this season? Hazard scores 25-plus goals and gets himself 15 assists, and they turn around and go, well, Chelsea won the Premiership title because of Hazard.
Maybe.
Does Mourinho want a team where responsibility is shared out and then everyone can go, no, it's great, great tactics from Mourinho. Mourinho's picked a great team again. He shuffled players around and it's got results and it's been an all-round performance. And then that lands very much more on the manager's shoulders rather than one specific player.
So are you saying more like, will Mourinho allow anyone else to be the star attraction? Or does Mourinho have to be the star attraction in order for his teams to play well?
Yeah, it certainly seems to be. I mean, it's definitely his time at Real Madrid seemed to show that
he didn't want
one player being not so much the main player, but certainly bigger than him.
No, I agree. I mean, he had problems, I believe it was with Casillas and Ramos. And
he had big really problems with Casillas, didn't he?
Yeah,
dropped him for almost an entire half of an end of the season, really.
Well, which, at the same time, must point out that I do think he was right as well. I do think CS hasn't been the goalkeeper he was of 5 or 6 years ago, and he did need dropping, but there is a way that you drop these certain players, and Mourinho made it quite a clear statement when he dropped Casillas, and he sort of almost invited the controversy. And right now, I just look at Chelsea and I just think, there's something missing there. There's something not right. It's Mourinho's created this siege mentality, and it's looking like the players haven't exactly bought into it, to me.
No, to be fair, they look like they're running around being hard done by all the time, and instead of actually going, no, let's make sure we don't need to be relying on referees' decisions to win games, let's make sure everything is clear-cut, let's make sure there's no chances for discussions about goals over lines, offsides, opportunities and things like that. But they're almost sort of buying into the mentality that we are being hard done by, and it's very much coming across in the games and their attitude on the pitch as well.
Yeah, I mean, Gary Cahill's interview after the game I thought was very honest and a very good interview. He did pretty much say that they can't allow their heads to drop. Decisions go your way and don't go your way. And I thought, to be honest with you, he gave a better interview after match than Mourinho has all season. But let's talk about West Ham a little bit now, because after all, West Ham were the winners of the game. And I don't think West Ham won the game because Chelsea are in so much disarray. I think West Ham took advantage of the fact that they knew they could get at certain areas of Chelsea, and they targeted that central midfield, which is, you don't see that for Chelsea. They weren't going wide. They were trying to go through Payet as much as possible.
Well, I think the problem was, even when Chelsea did have the ball, they didn't look strong in midfield at all, where West Ham, you've only got to look at the teams they've beaten already this season. I mean, if that was a full-flowing Chelsea team, would West Ham have still beat them? Would Chelsea have got a result? I mean, that many teams have got a result against West Ham this season, and that's whether you're home or away. I mean, they've beaten Arsenal, they've beaten Man City,
Liverpool.
They have come up trumps in a lot of the big games that they've played this season. And I mean, you can't take nothing away from West Ham. I mean, everyone knows what sort of circumstances Chelsea are in at the moment.
You've got to but take even advantage if that's
of it. Oh, definitely, you've got to take advantage of it, and you could see that. But even if Chelsea had been playing their best football, you could have quite easily gone with a West Ham win,
and it
wouldn't have been out the question. I mean, I think West Ham are playing some really good football.
A West Ham win
really
at the Berlin ground
football.
Against a big team is not a shock.
No,
it? No matter
not
what
the
form
moment.
You're in. And
not
when you've
the
got
moment.
A player like Zaratti, I think he scored 4 in his last 5 starts for West Ham now. And I think they have got the best conversion rate at the Premiership in terms of shots to goals. So they're definitely a clinical team. And when you've got a player like Payet supplying balls all over the... You know, the balls that man can play is unbelievable.
He's such
unreal.
A good player. Such a good player.
And he gives you a chance all the time. And I love that Coyote in midfield. He can play midfield and centre-back. And he's just got such an engine on him. He reminds me so much... He reminds me of what people think Yaya Touré is, which is this great defensive midfielder. When in actual fact, Yaya Touré isn't that great defensive midfielder. He's more of an attacking midfielder. But he reminds me of the player that everyone looks at Yaya Touré as being. And he's not. But... A very, very good team. They've got a very good defence. Even though Winston Reid was actually out at the weekend, I think they've got a great fullback in Jenkinson.
Yeah.
I think he's looking very good. I'm not sure whether Arsenal will want him to go or whether he stays. I'm not sure there. Cresswell at left back is a very promising English international. Up and comer, definitely. And obviously with the pace of Lanzini, Payet and Zarate, with Sacco, who just runs all game. They've got chances. They've got options everywhere, all over the pitch. And we've seen already that Slaven Bilic is not scared to throw in a youngster like he did at Arsenal, was it?
Yeah, no, definitely.
He throws these youngsters in.
As much as he's willing to do that, it is nice to see him still playing Noble, who's been there for donkey's years now, to be fair.
Captain.
And gone right through the strife with them, through the ups and the downs, and could hopefully go through this season with West Ham and... Obviously, they're not going to push for the title, Europe. They might go for a Europa spot. But I think it'd just be nice to see, for his point of view anyway, West Ham just having a decent season. Decent season. It's been well overdue for West Ham, I think.
Mark Noble, future England player, could he make the plane in the summer?
I don't think so. I think that ship might have sailed a little bit, to be fair for him.
If he continues the season he's having, I think he's got a good shot. And I think he's having a very, very, very good season. Right, next we should go to the Emirates.
Hybrids.
Not Highbury, the Emirates.
It's been the Highbury.
Okay, so Arsenal obviously won this game 2-1. They took the lead through Giroud, then doubled it very quickly with another Koscielny goal. Very, very good defender, Koscielny.
2 headers as well.
Yeah,
it's
and then...
Very rare Arsenal get 2 headers in a game.
Yeah, 2 set plays as well.
Yeah, but I think that's purely down to Ozil and Cazorla, to be fair, the delivery that... them two can produce is just out of this world.
Well, Ozil's having the season of his life at the moment at Arsenal. Well, the best season he's had at Arsenal. He had great, good seasons at Madrid, but he's finally shown his worth to Arsenal. And I think that Sanchez has obviously helped that a hell of a lot. I mean...
Well, you can see Ozil's now picked up that number 10 role and playing in the middle, but every time you look at him, he's slightly out to the left. Him and Alexis Sanchez don't often separate themselves too much from each other at the moment. You can see that they've obviously noticed there's a connection there. No doubt they probably get on well off the pitch as well. And they just enjoy being around each other on the pitch because they seem to be in tune with each other
at the
moment.
That little 4 unit of Coquelin, Cazorla, Ozil and Sanchez definitely seem to be all on the same sort of wavelength, if you know what I mean.
Definitely.
Ozil's almost playing that role going back to the Chelsea game, is what we thought Hazard might play at Chelsea, the sort of free role,
yep,
where he can do pretty much, you know, because Ozil's not expected to do too much tracking back, and you don't sort of expect that off these sort of flair players.
Been something that he's been criticised of last season.
But he wasn't doing it up the top.
No.
That was the problem. So if he's not chasing back and he's not doing it going the other way, well, then people have got every right, I think, to ask questions about what does he offer this team? Are we just carrying him? This season, he's just started like a house on fire, and I believe he's got the highest amount of assists to games ever in the Premier League at the moment. He's providing an assist every 2.5 games, which this is how good Ozil's been. That surprised me. I thought that was a bit low. I thought he's been assisting every game so far this season.
Well,
every game I seem to watch of
it's
Ozil
a benchmark
playing.
He almost sort of sets himself because of how good he is. And I mean, even before he came to Arsenal, every time that you thought, right, Ozil, you thought assists. That's what he's renowned for. He's not renowned for making gut-busting runs. He's not renowned for scoring goals. He's known for assists. And that's what you get when you buy that type of player.
He has been brilliant. Over the, especially like, the last six games, I cannot remember him having a bad game.
It's because he hasn't. It's purely because he hasn't. He's just been outstanding. But
do you think that does coincide with Sanchez coming in form? Because let's be honest, right? Beating no around the bush here, Ozil was getting hammered last season.
Well, let's be fair. I could spray a 20, 30 yard pass to Alexis Sanchez and it could be 5 yards out of range. The bloke's got the energy and the determination to get on the end of that ball regardless.
Well, it's the best player.
So even if it's not on a 5 pence to his foot, it doesn't matter because he's going to get there and he's going to probably still get the defender out of the way in the process. So I think he definitely compliments Ozil in the fact that he makes everything look good and there's normally a finish at the end of it, or he's setting up an assist as well, to be fair. I mean, even though Ozil's got such a great assist rate, I guarantee you that there's probably about another 5-6 assists going on that other people are claiming where he's had the ball at his feet previous.
Yeah.
So if it's Alexis Sanchez getting an assist for Giroud, you can guarantee that Ozil's passed that ball to Sanchez.
And the thing with Sanchez is he's got this great ability where he makes a bad pass into something all the time. And it can bounce off his legs, but he still manages to get through the player. Luis Suarez is very much the same. It's not step overs, it's not little drag backs in the box or attacking the player. It's always just, he seems to sort of almost go through the player. It's an amazing skill to have. And not to mention, he's probably got one of the best right foots in the Premier League. As soon as he gets on the edge of the box, it always ends up with a shot on target. He's such a good player at that. But also, there was Everton in this game, and I do think Everton definitely gave Arsenal food for thought, especially
second half. It helped getting the goal just before half time. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. Lucky goal, I think.
Slightly.
But you could see it. It's Everton at the end of the day. They're always a threat, I feel, especially on counter attacks. They've got pace.
They've got some very good
forward
players.
They have. I mean, Coleman, I really, really like him.
Yeah.
I think he's going to go somewhere soon. I think Everton will be very lucky to keep hold of him.
Barkley seems a very good player as well. He needs
if
to stop.
If one goes, would the other go? How many of these sort of players can they keep? I mean, they've really well in signing Lukaku. And the fact that they have got Roberto Martinez as a manager has probably assisted in a lot of that. I think if there was many other managers there, maybe some of these players might not have come to the players that they are today, or they wouldn't be at the club still. So yeah. I think he's got to take a lot of credit as well. But it's Everton at the end of the day. You know what you're going to get with Everton recent seasons. They're going to put up a decent fight. They have got players that can do anything from nothing, which you did see from Barkley just before half-time. But the second half, no, they were a very much better team. I think Arsenal maybe took the foot off the gas a little bit, but at 2-1...
Can you afford to take your foot off the gas at 2-1?
That's what I was about to say. I don't think you
can,
to
be fair.
These are
the sort of games, for me, Arsenal would have lost last season. This is the big change in Arsenal. This is a sort of massive change we've seen in Arsenal this season, the evolution of Arsenal, where a team will get a lucky goal, like you say, like Barkley got it, deflected off Gabriel winning. You can't help that. But the Arsenal of past would have gone on to draw the game, maybe even lost the game. At home or away, it doesn't matter where it is at the Emirates or if it's away from home, Arsenal have that in their locker where they would just... Let's face it,
the Arsenal of old, would they have been going into half-time 2-1 up or would they have been going in 1-0 down? Because set pieces are not something they're renowned for scoring.
Sure, yeah.
So, I mean, we couldn't get through any other way. It took two set pieces to get the goals. They were very good set pieces, don't get me wrong, but you wouldn't have seen that from Arsenal 2-3 years ago, getting two goals from set pieces. So
maybe that
it would have been completely inconceivable that Arsenal could have gone into that 1-0 down.
Well, I'm pretty sure Everton are lining up at a corner thinking to themselves, well, we probably won't have to deal with anything too much here, as long as we pick up Giroud.
Yeah,
the ironically thing is that Giroud actually scored, which I noticed a little move in that where I can't remember who was with him, but Giroud was standing behind someone. Very sort of, he was doing that. It was a purposeful move. And that player then just blocked off his runner. And Giroud just came around to the near post and just, and it went. This is something that is coming more into the games, I think. This blocking of runs on a direct free kick or a free kick or a corner. All of these sorts of things. These players are now blocking runs of other players. It's not against the rules and it's been going on for ages, but
you're starting to notice it now.
When it's the good, there comes a point where a good striker needs to be picked up by a good defender. I just see too much mismatches all over the pitch. And I can't remember who was picking up Giroud, but either way, he shouldn't be getting away from him. Whether it's Phil Jagielka or Ross Barkley picking him up, it doesn't matter. He should not be able to get away. He is Arsenal's, by far, best header of the ball.
Well, if not, they have two people on him.
Exactly.
You shouldn't even be having just one person on him.
Or you zone or mark against him. But, like we said, this is not Arsenal renowned for doing this. So you can sort of understand that they maybe just thought to themselves, as long as we win the first ball, we should be OK here. Arsenal are not going to be...
Yeah, maybe concentrating more on open play rather than defending set plays.
The evolution of Arsenal this season. They have definitely moved on. They definitely have that little bit between their teeth. The time will tell when the pressure's really on. And this is like January, February. We have been here before with Arsenal.
Yeah, no, definitely.
It's not new ground. This is not something... I know they have only gone top... I think they've gone top for the first time in a year and a half. But they have been threatening to do this. And maybe... But I have a sneaky feeling for Arsenal. I didn't have them. Did not have them as title... contenders, really. I thought same old Arsenal, and at the beginning of the season, I must admit, after the first loss at West Ham at home, I thought, there we go. But they definitely have knuckled down. Cazorla and Coquelin are playing brilliantly. You cannot fault either of them.
I think Coquelin's stats have been through the roof for the end of the last season and this season, to be fair. I mean, everyone was saying through the summer, why haven't we brought a defensive midfielder? Well, I think the back end of last season, you couldn't argue with his stats that there was another better defensive midfielder in the Premiership or most other leagues out there, to be fair.
No,
it's surprising to look at, but it was there in black and white.
And his passing has definitely improved this season as well. It helps having someone like Santi Cazorla next to you who is just brilliant at what he does. He can go off left foot, right foot.
Well, he can buy you a little bit of time even if he hasn't got the ball.
And he's comfortable receiving the ball. He'll receive the
ball with two players around him, one player around him. It doesn't really matter for him at the moment. And I think that's his confidence. He's just got such confidence at the moment.
Well, when you can take a touch and then lay it off to Santi Cazorla, who can be, like you say, it doesn't matter. You don't have to go to his left foot. You don't have to go to his right foot. You can just give it to him and he can move it quickly or he can hold on to it for a bit longer to buy you some time. He's just got this in his locker. And I know he started out wide and he was almost playing the role that Ozil plays now. Wenger, I think it was City away last season, decided that he was going to pull him back a little bit and almost use him as that deep line playmaking role.
Well, it was the first...
He has not looked back since.
...game that we went into, really, where we had to... Wenger's actually gone, OK, then, going out all-out attack, playing them at their own game isn't going to work anymore. We've tried it in the past. It hasn't worked. We've been turned over. We need to try a new approach. And it just sort of clicked. And he's gone with it ever since, to be fair. The only thing that I question, a lot of people are saying that's masterstroke from Wenger, it's great play. A lot of these positions that players have found themselves in that are in form at the moment have come through injury.
They have come through injury.
I mean, we had to pull back Coquelin from on loan spell at Charlton. And
Bellerin.
If we hadn't have had the injuries, would he have even got in the team? Would Santi Cazorla in the middle, next to Arteta, next to Flamini, next to maybe even Wilshere if he's fit, would that be the same sort of combative midfield that we've seen of late of Arsenal? And yeah, like you say, the same with Bellerin. Amazing player this season so far, amazing player. Would he have got a decent run of games to show his worth if it wasn't for Debuchy getting injured last season?
And when there's no doubt, centre back you needed.
Exactly. Not even in a sense, it's proved to... It's all been very convenient, I feel.
It's
not taking anything away
nicely,
from Wenger, but it has fallen into place a little bit, yeah, definitely.
He often stumbles across what I call these season savers every year, where Arsenal will struggle, they'll put together a good run, then they'll struggle again, and then all of a sudden, from January to April, they're the best team in probably Europe, by none, because they win games, and they don't concede many. This season, Wenger stumbled across that, it seems, a little bit earlier, a hell of a lot earlier, to be fair, than normal.
Well, it was good that we stumbled across it towards the back end of last season. I mean, I think maybe the last 10 out of push 15 games last season, on form, we were the best team in the Premiership.
Oh, yeah, and it's been fortunate
that we've managed to carry that form through to this season. I mean, you could argue that it didn't work out exactly according to plan, the fact that we lost the first game of the season. But since then, it certainly looked like we've just kicked on from last season. I do hope the Ramsey injury doesn't affect things too much, because I've got to say, I think Oxlade-Chamberlain missed an opportunity to impress on Saturday.
Yeah.
Missed a big opportunity to impress. I was expecting a lot more from him. His passing was out. he just looked a little bit lost on the pitch at times. He was getting back in from the players
not
a little bit.
Not up to speak with the rest of the team.
No, definitely not. But that's not his own fault. No, we've had a team now where you'd have expected changes in the last five games, and I don't think there's been any. You've had
maybe
Alexis
the centre-backs.
Sanchez.
Centre-backs, I think you've changed them about a little only bit through injuries and illnesses.
Yeah, it's not been for resting players.
No. Everyone could probably tell from this you're an Arsenal fan. And one thing Arsenal have done this season is they've given up a lot more possession. There's not so much emphasis on possession. They don't need 70% possession now. As an Arsenal fan, is that refreshing for you? Or is that not the Arsenal way, if you like? You're still playing the Arsenal way when you've got the ball, but you're not almost hunting down the ball. And I think maybe, just maybe, that might have been the ingredient that you have been missing. Because, let's be honest, you haven't got many ball-winning players in your team. I think Coquelin and Flamini are probably your only natural players that want to go and hunt the ball down and win it. So maybe defending more as a unit, giving up that little extra 15% of the possession, defending as a unit and almost playing
counter-attacking almost.
Yeah, counter-attacking football. Back to what you was when you had all these Emmanuel Petit and Aidemars.
We had Thierry Henry there who had bags of pace. If we didn't have Walcott down the middle, would we have been able to surrender so much possession to Bayern Munich Tuesday night?
Well, having
because
Walcott
we
down the middle gives you that outlet, doesn't
not
it?
Not only Walcott's pace, but, I mean, Giroud showed it amazingly on Saturday that he can hold a ball up. His first touch was brilliant. Best I've seen him play ever, I think, to be fair, Saturday.
Really?
Yeah, no, for what he done when he wasn't creating chances. I mean, every ball that went up to him, it was on his chest, straight down to his foot. It was on his knee. It was under control. And I've seen him have some erratic touches in the past, at best. But I don't think he really had a bad touch at all Saturday, to be fair. Mm-hmm. And he had to hold the ball up with maybe two players around him for a couple of seconds before he even got a little bit of support. And, I mean, even then, he was being able to look up, still find a pass, lay it off to someone, look for it back. He had a lovely little bit of link-up play towards the end with, I believe it was actually Oxlade-Chamberlain, one of the best things he'd done that could have resulted in a goal. He hit the post at the end of the day. So I think the fact that we've got Giroud and Walcott up front, that we can play either or depending on what team we play, means that we don't necessarily need the possession anymore. It's the Arsenal way, to be fair, isn't it? I mean, see all of them getting up there at one point, apart from, I mean, even, I don't know whether it was midweek or at the weekend, Per Mertesacker, he gets licence every now and again just to throw himself forward and see if there's a ball that's going to come into the box that he can get his head on the end of.
Yeah, no, but I think, you know, a lot the game overall, I believe Arsenal probably... Well, they definitely deserve to win the game. But there were some scary moments in there. I think it was Lukaku that hit the bar towards the end where he should have really scored there.
Yeah, no, and again, saves.
Yeah, Everton will probably come out of that game feeling a little bit disgruntled about it. You know, and there was no controversial decisions or nothing like that. And Everton really only had themselves to blame. But I think there's encouragement there for Everton. I mean, coming off the back of a Manchester United defeat, where they lost 3-0 at home, all right, it was under circumstances which, you know, was sad for them with Harold Kendall passing. But either way, it was a bad day at the office all round.
Definitely showed a response which was what was needed.
Yeah, I think they showed a great response there. So overall, I think they're going to have a good season this season, Everton. I think they may surprise a few. I mean, a lot of people are talking about Tottenham and possibly Liverpool maybe taking advantage of Chelsea's slip-up. Everton are right there. Make no mistake about that. Everton are definitely right there. Up with them, I think.
I think any team that can go on a run of three games without a loss is going to get to Christmas and see themselves up there, thereabouts. I mean, there's going to be a lot of competition this season.
I think so.
For that UEFA spot, UEFA Europa Cup spot, I think, to be fair.
Well, moving on. Let's move on now, because I feel that we've talked way too much about Arsenal.
Yeah, no, we could do that all day.
No, we couldn't. So, moving on, let's go to Old Trafford, where, obviously, it was a stellar, enthralling game.
Yeah, no, I was absolutely glued
chances
to it. Couldn't take my eyes
everywhere.
Away.
0-0 it finished. I don't know how it ended 0-0 with the amount of shots on target both teams had. But overall, obviously, we are being sarcastic, because it was one of the most dire derby games I think I've ever watched. There were some good things in there. Gary Neville wrote a piece yesterday where he said it was probably the best 45 minutes of the Premier League so far. I think he was slightly pushing it a little bit there, but you could see the, what he's thinking behind it. It was great defensive play. It was two teams not giving up anything, but there was no mistakes, which the Premier League is littered with, let's be honest. Yeah. It's littered with mistakes these days from the big teams. The amount of big scorelines you see between big clubs in the Premier League, it's been bordering on farcical recently.
Yeah, no, definitely.
So it's good. It was good to almost see that. You could see what he was saying. It was good to see two teams clashing and not giving each other an inch.
Well, to be fair, it was a massive, massive game for both teams. I mean,
yeah.
With Arsenal already picking up the win, either team knew that if they won, they'd be top of the table.
Well, Manchester United needed to win 3-0, 4-0. But either way, I mean, it would have made the
level
gap
on points. Yeah. City would have gone top by 2 points at the moment, got a superior goal difference to everybody, I believe. Mainly due to a couple of big scorelines,
yeah,
not so much impressive displays. But it was a big, big game.
Something.
And whoever won that game would have been looking down on the other.
But I mean,
and I think that showed maybe there was a little bit too much respect for each other. Maybe it was just tactical. Maybe it was just that both teams were defending really well. But I don't know how much of a brilliant 45 minutes a team can have when you've got Wayne Rooney playing as bad as what he did, to be fair. How that can be the best 45 minutes in football when you've got Wayne Rooney looking like he's just walked off a Sunday league pitch and into the Old Trafford Stadium. I haven't got much of a clue, to be fair. It's probably I've stuck up for Rooney quite a lot in the past. Quite a lot. And he turned me. That's the one display that I've seen of his where I wouldn't have him in my squad, to be fair.
Well, someone said something after the game which made me laugh, and I think it was quite fitting, really. They said, Manchester United were lucky that Aguero and Silva were injured. Manchester City were lucky that Rooney wasn't. And I think that's the case. I really do. I mean, we're talking about a bloke that had a worse pass completion than David De Gea,
yeah,
and only equal to Joe Hart. Now, these are two goalkeepers that 50% of their balls are humped up into the air. So to have that, he gave away possession 20-odd times. He only had 44 touches, but he gave away possession over half of them times.
I think the biggest problem is, though, the fact that he's had these sort of performances that have been well below par for a Premiership footballer who wants to be at a decent level, let alone for Wayne Rooney's standard that he's set himself over the years. But he still gets left on the pitch.
You see players with a better touch than Rooney at the moment.
I'd be pulling him off after 70, 75 minutes, if that.
Yeah,
I wouldn't leave
him
that
on Sunday.
But yet you see players coming off that you think, well, he hasn't done nothing wrong. Why is he coming off?
Yeah.
Wayne Rooney could have come off and that player could have still come on. It's not like you're bringing off a defender for a defender and going, well, why don't we bring on a midfielder for Rooney? It's not tactical. They're bringing off players that, I mean, bringing off Mata. Fair enough, might not have had the best game.
But
at the end of the day, you're looking at Wayne
Rooney.
He wasn't
having a shocker, was he?
Was he still playing better than Wayne Rooney? Personally, yeah, I think he was. And I think Matt is one of them players that, okay, you could argue Wayne Rooney could always do anything at any time. Yeah, the old Wayne Rooney could. The old Wayne Rooney seems to be gone at the moment. And personally, I mean, I'm not a massive Man United fan, but I do like Mata to a degree, and I'd have left him on the pitch. I think with Martial's pace and the fact that you threw on Lingard,
yeah,
I just think, well, why not have that player sat behind him that could ping that ball? Because Wayne Rooney couldn't play a 5-yard pass, let alone spray a 20-yard ball to split a defence, which Mata can do that.
Well, Mata will find that run. Mata will. I mean, what frustrated me throughout the game was the lack of changing throughout the game. You don't have to take off a player to replace a player to change the system. He could have easily shoved Wayne Rooney to the left, moved Martial up front, and then left it the way it was. He didn't do that. He was so adamant that Rooney has to play up front. That hindered us. I honestly think, and this is what I really do think, if we'd have had a striker up front like Martial, for example, I think we'd have scored. I do think, or we would have created a hell of a lot more. But let's not get away from the fact that Rooney was not the only bad player on the pitch on Sunday. You can look at where was De Bruyne, where was Sterling, where was Yaya Toure. These are three big game players bought for huge money that just failed to live up. I mean, De Bruyne was playing against Rojo, who got absolutely mugged in midweek.
Yeah.
Right? I was shocked to see him on the pitch. Yeah,
to be
me
fair.
Too. When
I
he came out,
shocked
I was
shocked to see him on the pitch.
As hell.
Man City must have been rubbing their hands. They should have been rubbing their hands together,
yeah,
going, expose him. Expose him, expose him, expose him. Everything that we've got, throw it at him, because he's had a shocker in midweek, and in theory, he should be having a shocker today.
Yeah.
I mean, as you can't even turn around and say that, okay, both teams defended really, really well and didn't give the attackers the opportunity, because they never really got tested to find out if they were having a good game or not. And I think if you're a decent attacker, or you're noticing a defender that's having a bit of a stinker, the first thing you're going to look to do is go, OK, then, that's where we're going to hit first.
But it's been,
first 5 minutes, let's just target Rojo.
Ronaldo's probably the best at it, and it's being an attacker, you've got to be able to spot a vulnerability and an advantage for yourself. So the amount of times Ronaldo will pull onto a fullback who's smaller than him, ready so he can head the ball,
yeah,
it's unbelievable. He will purposely seek out what he considers a weak link in a team. Now, someone like Sterling should have been looking at Antonio Valencia and thought, he cannot deal with movement. He's not too bad pace-wise, because he can keep up with anyone, Antonio Valencia. But if you can get those little triangles working around him, he's a little bit
just
slow to react.
Just confuse him a little bit. Just
and Rojo is very much proactive. He wants to dive in. So someone like De Bruyne should have been a bit more clever to think, well, if I just lure him in, lay it off, I can spin round. And they did get round a few times, but it wasn't often enough. And it just really, there was no real risks taken, I think, by either team. They were both quite happy for it to peter out and end up like the dull stalemate that it ended up. I think the best players coming out of that game are definitely the centre-backs. I think Smalling was brilliant again. I think Otamendi showed exactly why all the top teams wanted him.
Yeah, no, definitely. He was about the only shining light
for City, yeah.
For City, to be fair.
Joe Hart made two, well, one especially great save. I couldn't believe he got down to that. I was up cheering. I thought it was a goal when Smalling had it.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Lingard hit the crossbar. But these are all chances in the last 5 minutes of the game, you know. It's easy to chase a game when you know that you're not going to get caught out too much.
Not mistaken either. They were all chances where Rooney wasn't involved in the build-up play.
Well, yeah, I don't want to hammer Wayne Rooney too much, because I don't think that would be too fair. Even though I do think he had a shocker, I don't want to hammer him too much. There were just bad players on the pitch for both teams. I think Schneiderlin's now shown his worth. I think he's fast becoming that defensive midfielder that maybe Arsenal needed, but not at the moment, obviously. Jones, it's good to see him get a good run into the team, and hopefully he can stay injury free. There was a few calamitous moments in there where he dived in, but he's got the pace to recover. I think Valencia and Rojo were brilliant. De Gea had absolutely nothing to do whatsoever. Herrera, I was a little bit disappointed with, because he's now getting a run in the team, and
he's
not really taking his opportunity. And we know with Van Gaal, other than when it comes to Rooney, he hasn't got much patience with players. So for him, these are crucial games for him, and he's not showing that. He's not taking games by the scruff of the neck now. He needs to sort that out. Maybe it's just because we played Everton away, and
do you think the
problem? But mind you, he did score against Everton away, so I don't know what the hell
competition
I'm
for
talking
places
about.
Though. I mean, if you've got Depay, would have been playing a lot better at the moment. Does that then force the other players to play a little bit better? I mean, it's been well documented that Van Gaal's had a massive falling out with him as far as his sort of attitude goes. Do you think that that's then leaving the other players going, well, he ain't getting in the team, so it just means that my place is secure?
I definitely
think
there's an
element.
There's
not enough competition for places.
I mean, going back on the Herrera thing, I must say, clarify right now, I was totally wrong, because I totally forgot about the Everton game. It was brilliant in that. But the general point of what you're making is right. Yeah, there does seem there's a lot of players in the team where they haven't got competition. They don't feel threatened by it. Like Rooney is a great example. Who's threatening him for the striking spot? Okay, you can say Martial. Fans are now clamouring for Martial to play up front. But what fans are forgetting is, with Martial playing up front, well, that means Depay comes back in. And Depay was getting absolute pelters before he got dropped, to the point where he needed to be dropped because he was getting pelters. I think there's a real case, and this is just me personally, of playing Martial on the left and Depay up front for a game, and seeing how that works. Depay is one of these players that likes to make space for his right foot. I think on the wing, especially in the Premiership, players, defenders, know how to read that. They've played Ashley Young nearly like 38 times over the career. It's one of them sort of tricks. You come in on your right foot and you either get a good ball in or you get a shot in. It's not hard to defend against, and you can deal with it quite easily. Up front, it might be a different animal, but me personally, I think Martial up front would be brilliant as well. But like I said, that would mean Depay coming out onto the left again. Fans weren't happy with that before. Is Martial going to get the service there? These are all things to talk about, but I believe that we have found way too many talking points in a game that was absolutely boring, to be quite honest with you. I don't think there was that much talk about it, and I think we should just move on from it now, because I don't think it really deserves much talk at all. So now let's get on to Liverpool. And obviously it was Klopp's first Premiership game in front of the Kop. Obviously, anticipation was high for the game, and I think over these last three games that Klopp has been in charge of Liverpool, it's shown the Liverpool fans and Klopp himself that it's going to be a process. It's going to take time. The squad is severely unbalanced. There's no width in the team whatsoever. And obviously with Benteke up front, they've got this focal point that they almost seem embarrassed to hit. Now, he's obviously got certain attributes, Benteke, and one of them is get the ball into the box in the air and he will get headers, which he proved with his goal, which made it 1-0. The problem with Liverpool at the moment is they almost need to score two goals in order to get anything out of a game, or not anything out of a game as such, but to get 3 points or stand a chance of getting 3 points. And yeah, it just seems like a very, very unbalanced squad at the moment, and it needs work. That's all it does. It does need work, and it will take time to get the players in, but I've got no doubt Klopp is a great manager. He is a very, very good manager, definitely. And he will get it right. Once he gets the players in that he needs, he will get it right.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. And it's kind of scary, to be fair, to an extent. And it's one of them things where I think any Liverpool fan true to themselves, like you say, knew it was going to be a long process, knew that it was going to take some time. And it's just what he can do in that time, to be fair. How far can he take Liverpool Football Club, depending on what the others do around him?
It's like I say, it's going to take a process, and there's no width in the team at the moment. They've not exactly got the players, I think, personally, to play Klopp's way that he likes to press. He likes to press high. He likes to make pressing numbers, but he also, there's a method behind his pressing, so they'll recognise when to press, and I don't think he's got the players just yet to do that.
The thing is, with Liverpool, I don't think it will take many additions to turn them into the sort of team that Klopp wants them to be, because they have got a lot of potential there in some players. They do need some additions. In January, I don't think he'll get as many as what he wants, maybe one or two, but then will then one or two players be the players that he would have picked in the summer? It's an awkward position for him to be in, the fact that he has got to work with what he's got, and what he's got necessarily isn't that great, to be fair.
He's got a very unbalanced squad to work with now, and you can almost see him plugging gaps, waiting for that window to open. The only problem for Liverpool is how much money have Liverpool actually got to spend? I don't think they've got as much money as some people think they've got to spend. And personally, it's been said on the forums that Liverpool need to sell in order to buy first. So you're looking around the team and you're thinking, well, where's the next big purchase, the next big sell? Well, who is it?
I don't think they've got one at the moment. Well,
Coutinho is probably their best player.
Yeah, no,
is he
without
really
a doubt,
on
I
form
think
at
he
the
is.
Moment? I think over the last six games, he's really gone off the ball. He doesn't seem happy. He really doesn't seem happy. I mean, yesterday there was, I think Liverpool scored, and he didn't even embrace the scorers or nothing. He just stood there. It just, there's a problem. I don't know. I don't think there's a problem there with Coutinho. I don't think he's that type of player. But I definitely feel that Coutinho's patience might be wearing thin at Liverpool now. He might be thinking maybe that move to Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, that might materialise in the summer. And I think there's an element there of Coutinho slightly distracted for what the summer may bring for him.
Would they get the money for him to be able to overhaul a squad like what they have with Sterling, like what they did with Suarez? I mean, they got mega bucks for both of them players, and went out and wasted it, really.
Yeah.
Would they get the money for Coutinho to be able to go and buy three players? It's going to have to be Coutinho for maybe two other players, if they did sell him, and them two players are going to have to then still be pretty shrewd buys as they are. I mean,
they're going to have to be youthful players
that have got promise, but then can still come in and hopefully show that promise from an early stage. I mean, Klopp does like his young players that he wants to develop. It's easier then to put your philosophy onto them sort of players, I suppose.
Well, Pochettino done it at Spurs, didn't he?
Even now, how young a player can you get for £15 million that's got a lot of potential, because I don't think you're going to get much more than about £35 million for Coutinho if he does go.
I don't think you'll get 35 for him, to be honest with you, not on current form.
It depends.
I don't think Liverpool have to look too far abroad, wide, I suppose you could say, for these young players. I think they have actually got a few decent young players. I think the young lad Rosita, I think it's such a shame he's got injured on international duty for England, because I really think the Klopp was looking at using him a lot more regularly. I know he's only young. I think he's only about 17 or 18, but he's got ability, the lad. He really has got ability, and I do think that Klopp was looking at using him. So there are players in, probably young players in the squad that Klopp feels that he can use, but has he got the experience or that razzmatazz around them in order to allow them to grow into a game? You can't chuck these young players in and expect them to be the vocal point of the team. You can't do that. It's very rare that that works.
It's anything.
It is.
It's too much pressure. And I think he's an intelligent enough manager to not do that. But will his hands become tied to the point where he maybe hasn't got choice and has to maybe put that on a couple of their heads and say, look, you are going to be Liverpool standout player. I want you to be Liverpool standout player. I know it's a lot of pressure, but I think with a little bit of help, we can make you become that. And then maybe that might then allow a few of the other players to not have to worry about that, because there's a lot of players at Liverpool that possibly then have got pressure on their shoulders. I mean, Adam Lallana, there's got to be pressure on him.
Well,
there's got to be pressure on him.
He's got to start performing, hasn't he?
It is starting to tell now. I mean, you can forgive him maybe a little bit at the beginning.
Bedding in periods.
Yeah, no, you've got to give a player bedding in periods. But now is the time where he should be the one that's, him and Coutinho especially, driving Liverpool to results, in a sense. Not necessarily grabbing the headlines, getting the goals, but almost the driving force behind Liverpool winning games. Grinding out results.
Yeah,
making sure that, okay, you go 1-0 up against Southampton, who are a very good team, who we haven't spoke much about at the moment.
Which we will get on to.
But you can't go 1-0 up against them and then end up conceding 7 minutes later, 8 minutes later.
You can't go 1-0 up against a team like Southampton and be shocked that they push for an equaliser. It's as simple as that. And Liverpool looked like they were shocked that Southampton started pushing for an equaliser. Now, Southampton probably would leave that game thinking a point was at least they deserved there.
Yeah, no, definitely.
I mean, they didn't take the game to Liverpool as such. You know, I think it was draw, for me, was probably a fair result. And if any team was going to shade it, it would have probably been Liverpool. But Southampton definitely went there with a game plan, and they nearly executed it to perfection. The Benteke header was probably one of the best headers I've seen for a long, long while. It was a great header. But that aside, Liverpool, 2 shots on target. Is that really good enough? I think they had 17 shots overall, and only 2 were on target. Well, there's a problem straight away. And it's almost like a leftovers from the Rodgers era, isn't it? You know, it's lots of shots, but not much on target. Silly mistakes in defence leading to silly goals conceded, which leads to silly points dropped. And Skirtle, I don't know how he's still starting first choice, because for me, he's not a very good defender at all. He seems to sit way too deep, or he will end up pushing too forward sometimes. He just seems to make the wrong decisions all the time. I think Sacco, it's no coincidence that Klopp's come in and Sacco's now seems to me like the first choice.
Yeah.
Sacco's a very, very good defender. A lot better on the ball than people give him credit for. But he's a very good defender. He reads the game very well. He can hold a line very well. But the problem is they've also got Mignolet in goal. Yeah, the problem is they've got Mignolet in goal, and he's constantly getting caught out. And I'm not sure how settled a back four can be under Mignolet. But let's talk a little tiny bit about Southampton and what a club they are, really. I mean, the production line at Southampton, you've got Ward-Prowse, Mane, Tadic. These are the next three that are definitely going to go. I think, anyway.
Well, there's been a lot of talk about Mane last summer, and it's only going to continue through the winter. And next summer, if he's there, will probably be the time that he goes. I think Sunderland have been quite good at keeping players until they're ready to let them go, rather than them go in once
the
team...
Yeah, they don't let a player dictate to them
forces when they're going to go. They're very good at deciding when they let players go, and they get good money for them. Let's face it, they get good money for them.
Well.
No matter who they go to, whether it's a club that have got the money to spend or a club that is a little bit thrifty, they still manage to get top dollar for their players, which rightly so, because they are good players. I mean, going right back to when Arsenal signed Walcott. Before that, Gareth Bale.
Isn't it?
I mean, the players that have come through there over the last decade have been top draw players. The thing is, though, if they had kept hold of them, how many would have then come through? Because other players wouldn't have got the opportunity.
This is true. You don't know how good a young player is until you give them an opportunity.
And no.
They've, by hook or by crook, had to give these young players an opportunity, and it's performed quite well for them, to be quite honest with you. So moving on, off to Bournemouth. Everyone always says the cliche, a ground only holds 10,000. It's lovely by the south coast. All the cliches being spoken, but in general, Bournemouth, to me, look doomed. They really do. I feel really... It looks a mixture between... For me, a mixture of bad luck and naivety. They've gone into the season with this fairy tale dream, and right now it's just getting found out all over the show. And Tottenham, 1-0 down after 49 seconds for a Matt Ritchie goal. And he seems a very good player to me. He seems like he's got a wand of a left foot, that's for sure. But once Spurs got going into their sort of rhythm, there was no looking back, and I think it was 3 goals in the first half they scored, and obviously a Harry Kane hat-trick. How much that's through Bournemouth's bad defending or Harry Kane's resurgence in form, I'm not quite sure yet. I think Tottenham have took a massive gamble relying on Harry Kane.
Without a doubt. I mean, it's going to be now the next game, the game after that, that will show whether Harry Kane is back on form or not. I mean, there's been questions over, I think, whether he's had an injury as well. And his right knee was heavily strapped for the Bournemouth game, and there's suspicions arising. He's had to come out and sort of clear things up, as if to say, no, don't worry, I haven't got a underlying problem. It was just precautionary or sort of an old injury that you don't want, obviously, going again. But
can he carry on doing it?
I mean, they haven't got much else there to lead a line, and he's going to get exposed at times, and he's going to get played at times when he probably could do with a rest. It's just now whether he can get that consistency that he had last season.
Well, I look at Tottenham and I think, without Harry Kane's goals, who else is scoring for them? Now, Eriksen's a great player. I'm a big fan of Eriksen. He's got a great set piece delivery. He can score free kicks. He can do pretty much everything with a dead ball. So he'll pop up with your 5 to 10 goals a season, but if Harry Kane isn't scoring 30 goals a season, where on earth are Tottenham's goals coming from?
Yeah,
Chadley doesn't look like, to me, like a naturally sort of goal-scoring winger. To me, anyway, doesn't seem it.
Well, it's no surprise that Tottenham are being linked to Vardy.
Yeah.
Because they haven't got that outlet for the goals apart from Kane, which is why, I mean, you've got Lamella, who has shown at times
what he can do at the moment, isn't he?
He got a lot of grief last season.
And the season
lot of
before.
Grief.
And brightly so as well, let's be honest. No, he did not perform at all.
Tottenham expect a lot from their players. They're
a team that want to have
Champions League aspirations. You need to be having players, like you say, that can justify their price tag, which he didn't do at all for the first 2 seasons. But now he is starting to show that. I mean, it would be interesting if Harry Kane did get injured and he had a run of games, would he then all of a sudden be the informed player?
Well, I don't think he's... Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Would Harry Kane get back in the team?
Would the spotlight be more on Eric Lamella? I think people are starting to recognise he's having good games, but I just think that Tottenham are turning into a typical Pochettino side. At Southampton, they were built upon a strong defensive unit that didn't concede it hardly any goals. Didn't score a bucket load of goals, but were very, very solid. And I think
ground out the results.
Yeah, and I think the acquisition of Alderweireld, especially at centre back, has been a masterstroke for them.
Yeah, no,
for
definitely.
Cheap money, you've got a Champions League experienced player there that's young still, still learning, and is only going to get better. Behind him, they've got one of the best goalkeepers in the Premier League in Hugo Lloris, and I just think that they've just took that little bit of a gamble, though, relying on Harry Kane to be fit all season. I think in January they may assess it, and I wouldn't be surprised if you saw Sardo Berahino arrive in January, maybe for the price that actually West Brom wanted, and Tottenham really should have paid for me. But overall, this game, to be honest, is not really much to talk about. I know Tottenham scored 5 goals, and Tottenham fans are going to be going absolutely mental now listening to this, that we're not lavishing them in praise, but I just think Bournemouth are that doomed at the moment that you can't read anything into that. I think it's par for the course, to be honest with you, and I think you're going to see a lot of these results against Bournemouth. I think that's 2 games in a row now where they've conceded 5 or more and in the Premier League. And I think it's, like I said, slight fairy tale living, thinking that the same players can do it, and also a naivety has cost them this. And I think it will cost them their Premier League place, to be honest with you. But let's move on from that. I think Tottenham, overall, I think they're going to have a good season, a solid season. as I said to you before, there's three teams that could take advantage of this dip that Chelsea are having, and one of them is definitely Tottenham, the other one's Everton, and the other one's going to be Liverpool. And which one of them three can take advantage from it? And this is the time when they need to, and they need to start picking up wins. Tottenham are not losing games. They're winning games, regardless of how it's coming about. They are winning them, and they're probably, for me, the best-placed team at the moment to take advantage of that. They're the ones picking up the points. So, overall, I think that they've got a good season to look forward to. So, let's move on quickly, obviously, to the Tyne Wear Derby. Not a game littered with quality, even though it was a game littered with controversy, shall we say. I do personally, for me, I think Newcastle should have had a penalty before the lead up to Sunderland's penalty. And also for the Sunderland penalty, I'm a little bit 50-50 whether that was a penalty myself. He did lean into him. It was a rather robust shoulder barge, I have to say. But
there's been
maybe
a
penalty
in about that have gone. I mean, you can only look at decisions that have been given in other games, and you do see a lot of them being allowed to go through now. I mean,
well, it's strength, isn't it? You can't take away the physical element of a football game. It's still a contact sport, and I think he was slightly robust, and maybe a penalty maybe would have justified there. A penalty and a red card for me was very, very, very harsh. But Sam Allardyce has not lost a game. His first game in charge of a new club at home, he has not lost it. Newcastle were gone into that game knowing what they were up against. Sam Allardyce would have drilled that team to keep solid. I don't think Sam Allardyce would have expected them to score three goals.
No.
But I wouldn't have thought that Sunderland team would have conceded more than one. And
well, this is a Newcastle side that scored five goals in their last game.
Six
goals in their last game, sorry.
One of them has got four of them on his own.
You'd have been expecting Newcastle to come at you with a little bit of enthusiasm, with a little bit of threat, right, can we sort of carry on how we finished last season?
Well, they'd have been confident,
game,
wouldn't they? That's the thing. They'd have been the confident team going into it.
You're away, if it was at home, maybe it might have been a different result. You're away from home, so you're not going to throw everything, but you've still got to carry on. And I think, like you say, Allardyce would have set up initially just not to concede.
Yeah.
Not to concede. And then if you can get a late goal, fair enough, albeit. But as it's turned out, Sunderland looked pretty convincing throughout, I think, to be fair.
Well, yeah. I mean, Sunderland have got some very, very, very good players at that squad, that team. There's no doubt about it. There's some really good players at Sunderland. How MV has ended up at Sunderland, I know he's got a bad attitude, but they've got some very good players, and they can't be took away from Sunderland. They've spent, or not spent loads of money, but they've acquired along the way some very good players. Larson's a half-decent player. He's got a good set-piece delivery on him. MV is a great defensive midfield player.
Yeah,
Adam Johnson is
by a lot of clubs.
Yeah, he's got a lot of pace. Arsenal were looking at MV before, but he has got previous attitude problems. I believe for France, he went off to a nightclub or something the day before a game, and it's known that he's got bad attitude problems. But for me, it wasn't a game littered with quality. It was a game, what it was, it was two teams playing each other. I mean, obviously,
yeah,
sandwiched in there. But so, I mean, let's just call it what it was. I think Sunderland are going to probably get the momentum here. I don't know who they've got coming up next. I haven't checked that far. But Sam Allardyce, I think, might get them out of trouble. I really do. And I think Norwich and Bournemouth are the teams that are, for me, going down.
Yeah.
And it'll be one of
who else?
Villa, Sunderland. I don't think Newcastle will be there. I think they've got too much quality, Newcastle, to be at the bottom. I know that's the cliche of you're never too good to go down. But when you've got players like Jan Mat, like Wijnaldum, like Kolasinac, like Mitrovic, like Perez, Sissoko, Tiago, these are good players that probably could get into a top six squad. You know, I could easily see a Tiote sitting on a Tottenham bench. I could easily see a Mitrovic sitting on a Liverpool bench.
Yeah, no, without a doubt.
I don't know how Wijnaldum's ended up there, to be honest with you. It seems very odd that he's gone there, for the money especially that he went there on for. But other than that, I just can't see them not being middle table in the end. I think they'll get enough points and be quite safe this season. I really do. Sunderland, on the other hand, I don't know about them. They're just so... It's been said there's a drinking culture at the club.
Yeah.
Sam Allardyce, you'd expect to be able to...
Eradicate it.
Yeah, if definitely.
Anyone can, it's going to be Sam Allardyce.
If Sam Allardyce can't get them players to knuckle down, well, no one can, and there's serious problems at the club, and they will go down. I do think that they will stay up, though, and I think you might see... I'm not sure who's going to go down. I can't call the 13 just yet, to be honest with you.
I think until you know who's going to step into the Aston Villa job, then it's a... It's a hard choice to say whether Villa will go down or not. I mean,
well, that's a very good segue. Let's talk about Villa. Obviously, of time of recording, Sherwood has gone.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, not surprised at all.
No, not one bit. He's
out of his depth.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think he came in with a lot of enthusiasm.
A lot of hype.
Thought that enthusiasm would be enough to then get into the players' heads and that they'd start performing well. Well, unfortunately, you need good players with enthusiasm, not just mediocre players and promising players with enthusiasm.
And you also need a good manager, and I just don't think he's a good manager. I don't think he's come up the right way. I think he was thrust into the Tottenham job, but by all accounts he stabbed AVB in the back there to get the job. He got in there. I know that he likes to say his win percentage at Tottenham is such and such, but for me, Tottenham, I don't know, he didn't get them playing. He got them more exciting, that's for sure, and they were scoring goals. But weren't...
with that, how then susceptible are you to then conceding goals?
And how effective would that be over a course of a season? And I think it's shown with Aston Villa. He's very good as a sort of six-week thrust manager to chuck in there, and he will hopefully have the enthusiasm, like you say, to get you away from relegation. But in terms of
long-term
longevity, I don't think he's the man. And he's been caught floundering
through experience. He needs to go to a championship team, to a Division One team.
The problem with Sherwood has always been, has he got that mentality? For me, Sherwood seems to be a sort of manager that thinks he deserves to be at a top club already, and he hasn't earned them badges yet. And he's got found out, and I think some really weird decisions were made by him. Bringing Michael Richards in, who is an injury prone defender, who has been at City, was not wanted, was chucked out to Fiorentina, I believe. Didn't really play. And he's come back to Villa, and he's all of a sudden Villa captain.
Yeah.
And there's players there like Westwood, there's players there like Guzan, who have been there for a long period of time, fought relegations, know the attitude that you need to get out of a dogfight, and he's chucked it to probably one of the most lax defenders going. I mean, Richard is known to be not really that much of a committed player. You know, he seems to me like he's a player that easily has his head turned, hasn't got the fight to be a top player, and he's given him the captain's armband. And for me, that these are decisions that tell me that he was just not ready yet. He's too inexperienced. He hasn't got the tactical know-how yet, how to manage a season, like you've said, longevity. There doesn't seem to be a plan there for longevity. And after the game, when he was asked, are you in a hole? And he turned around to the reporter and said, I'm not in a hole, Villa are. Well, no, they're in a hole because you've got them in a hole.
You're all in a hole.
I know that he lost.
Togetherness that you need to have. And that just showed there that there wasn't that togetherness, really.
Maybe that was comments from a manager that knew he was being sacked.
Possibly.
Even so, I mean, he said last week that he's going to keep swinging until something hits. Now, that's not... I mean, if you're a player and you're hearing that, you're not thinking, oh, this is the man that's going to lead us out of this trouble. You're looking at that thinking, wow, this is a man that hopefully... is hoping he gets lucky. For me personally, if I'm a player, I'm looking at that and not taking any confidence.
He needs to be in Vegas, not on a dugout.
Yeah, putting 100 quid on 32 red, definitely. So that was obviously six. They've only had six wins from 20 odd games so far. It's not going to improve for me. They're vulnerable. They are susceptible this season. I think that might be the year they go down.
It's been coming. They've been flirting with it for a few
like
seasons.
Like Sunderland,
now.
And I think one of them two might
drifting
just
in and out, and
be
then
that
always.
Camp.
Getting to February time and managing to put a run of results together, and then probably by the end of the season, their position don't reflect what sort of season they've had, really, because it's a bit flattering for them at the end of it.
They tend to go on runs, don't they, where they'll win three out of six games, and then it sort of neglects the fact that they've lost like six out of six before that.
Against teams that they really should be beating as well.
Yeah, it's wins against like Arsenal away that have kept them up, which is wins that you can't
bank on
every year. You're not going
to
get
those. You need
to
look at that fixture list at the beginning of the season and you think, right, we need to make these games our bankers. These games are going to be possibly relegation battle games.
And these games are ones we need to be winning
because they're six-pointers.
Yeah. So moving on from that, I think Villa have made the best decision they probably could have done at this point of the season, and it might be one that just saves them from relegation. I'm not sure, like you say, think who are the contenders for the job?
You've got Remy Gard.
Well fought by Arsene Wenger.
David Moyes.
Yeah, another good manager.
They had on there also Brendan Rodgers was 5-1 yesterday when I looked.
That would be calamitous.
I don't think he's quite that desperate for a job or the money.
And
I don't think
Villa are quite that desperate either, to be quite honest with you. I think the best thing for Brendan Rodgers at the moment is to maybe go away for a season and hopefully people will forget what calamitous last 16 months he's had. So let's move on. Big shout out to Watford. 2-0 win away. You can't get better than that. I mean,
even in the Arsenal game last week, they played some good football. They played some good football. And I've looked at them a few times this season and liked what I've seen, to be fair.
Kike Flores is
enjoyable
to watch. He's a very good manager. He'd done very well at Valencia as well. And his work got unnoticed a little bit at Valencia as well, because Valencia were in a bit of turmoil financially, and he stabled that ship, and he made sure, I think he got Champions League football as well, or he got very close to it anyway. I mean,
wouldn't surprise me, to be fair, considering he's come in and not necessarily changed much in the way of players.
Oh, no, he has.
Has he?
Yeah, they've had a right overhaul of players, Watford. I think they've bought 13, 14 first new players.
They're all pretty much in the first team.
Again, that shows great management, that he's been able to buy these players in that he thinks will improve them to keep them in the league. And he's getting them to work. Ighalo looks a very good player. Deeney looks like he's got Deeney playing how I didn't think Deeney could ever play, which is sort of almost for the team.
Yeah, no, I mean, well, it shows that. The fact that this is, without trying, he scored his first league goal this season.
Mm-hmm.
But he's had plenty of opportunities, but has been unselfish as well, like you say.
He's allowed Ighalo to get the goals.
Okay, then I can do a job here from a different perspective. I might not get all the plaudits, the fact that I'll be scoring the most goals in the season anymore, but
I'm willing to do a job for the team.
And if it means keeping my place, I'm willing to do that, which you want to see from players, to be fair.
Well, if
you
it means he's worth in the place team.
And still meaning something to the manager. Yeah.
If he's proven his worth in the team and it keeps him in the league, they've got no reason to look elsewhere in the summer.
Yeah, no,
and Watford are a club that have shown that they're not scared to go and recruit, so he's definitely offering them something, and Kike Flores definitely likes him. Next big shout has got to go to Leicester. I mean, what a season Leicester City have. I mean, we talked about West Ham earlier. Leicester are even, they're having an equally good season. Jamie Vardy with his 7th goal in 7 games. That's 10 for the season for him now.
Can he do it for 8? Can he do it for 8?
I mean,
they've mentioned the players that have done it on 7 in 7 games. Is there any players that have done it in 8 and 8?
Yeah, I think the record is 10. I think Ruud van Nistelrooy got 10 in 10. And I think that's the record so far. Can he break it? I don't know. Like you say, there's an element of me, and maybe it's a bit of an ignorance towards Jamie Vardy in personally, but I keep waiting for him to stop. I keep waiting for it to sort of like almost end now. This is it. It's finished.
Yeah.
I've been waiting for it, and it hasn't happened. And he's influencing games. That's the thing. It's not just he's scoring goals. He's influencing games. He's made a lot of the goals himself. The 2 against Arsenal were brilliant goals as well. And he's definitely, I've got...
And this is a player that was playing non-league football not so long ago.
Yeah, he was playing for Fleetwood.
There's been a few of them that have been popping up over the last couple of years.
Well, there's been some great players come from non-league. I think it was Ian Rush came from non-league. Ian Wright came from non-league. He's proven that there are gems to be found in non-league football still. And if you're willing to take a punt, you might just find one.
Do you think he's better off staying at Leicester for that? I mean, if Spurs come in for a bid with him in January,
I don't think
he'd be leave? Will he be allowed to leave? If he does, is he going to? I mean, if you're scoring that many goals for a team that's playing well,
they are playing very well.
They've got the Tinker Man there. He has carried on tinkering to a degree. He's kept the same team every week. He likes to mix around the midfield a little bit.
Well, people were a bit
Mahrez
shocked.
Is coming in and going out. He's coming in and playing really well and then getting dropped the next game. And sort of Leicester are still then getting the results as well, or still playing good football.
Well, people were shocked when Ranieri got put in charge. But what you've got to remember is this is a bloke that's finished. Okay, everyone brings up that, oh, he's never won a league or there's some stat like that. But he's always been second. So now he's gone to a Leicester team that aren't expected to get second. and they're performing very well. So he's proven what a good manager he actually is. And maybe he wasn't given the credit he deserved at Chelsea, or, well, I know he certainly wasn't given the credit he deserved at Chelsea, and the Chelsea fans still love
him. Managers get a lot of credit they deserve at Chelsea.
But let's get on to the main point of the Leicester game. It's pizza all round again. Yeah, another clean sheet.
Is it
another
Domino's or a Pizza Hut, do you think?
Another round of pizzas, and they're going to be happy as Larry. I don't think there's a better story in the Premier League than West Ham and Leicester at the moment doing so well, and long may it continue.
Yeah, no, it's only good for the Premiership, I think. It's only good for the Premiership because it pushes them teams on, and it's then got to push your Tottenhams, your Liverpools, to then find that extra dimension of we're not only looking to compete with maybe Arsenal falling away or another team for fourth place. We could potentially be scrapping it with West Ham and Leicester come February for a fourth place finish, which
is something completely
different because they've had so much dominance for them, sort of almost second spots for your
sixth, seventh
places. They've had so much dominance that they've almost taken it for granted, where now they're going to really have to work to not only beat these teams when they play them, but to have
them.
The consistency to then get above them and stay above them, which it just hasn't shown.
It hasn't shown at all.
I mean, fair enough, Liverpool haven't lost an amount of games, but I think the amount of games they've drawn is ridiculous.
I believe it's 4-1-1s in their last seven games, and I think they've only lost one of them games. So, obviously we're going back slightly on Liverpool here, but there is room for optimism at Liverpool, I think. I think Tottenham are winning games, not necessarily too convincingly, but also they're not looking shabby in games. And I think Everton as well will probably be another team that puts together a decent run of form that could arguably be up there as well. But like you say, they have got to rely on Leicester and West Ham slipping up. And at the moment, maybe one, but the other one doesn't look like they're going to slip up either. So,
and could you still then throw Southampton into that mix as well?
Southampton are going to be there or thereabouts. I think it's going to be there or thereabouts for the last couple of seasons.
Will this now be the season that they go, no, we can sort of dominate that second tier spot?
Yeah.
Or are we going to just fall outside of it? Because they've been flirting with it for a couple of seasons now.
Well, I think this season you're going to see, whereas normally the league's done and the fourth places are normally sort of sewn up, you know the teams, the usual contenders that are going to be there, and it's always the exciting bit of the season is that bottom half of the league. I think you might see a change this season where actually the bottom half isn't that exciting. Like I said, I'm pretty sure I know two of the teams that are going down.
Yeah.
And we probably know one of the other, this one out of another two, really. I think that top half, that top eight places will be very competitive this year, and that might be where the excitement is this year, and it is one that I am really looking forward to, because there's nothing, we always get excitement in the Premier League. It's one of the most exciting leagues in the world, maybe lacking in quality like the rest of the leagues, but it's one of the most exciting leagues
in the world.
But there's nothing better than seeing that little slightly more quality and excitement than it is seeing lack of quality and crazy games like Sunderland going away to City and winning. It's nice to see Tottenham having to battle it out with teams like Southampton, for instance, to get into that sixth and fifth place.
Yeah.
It's good to see teams like Leicester being up there and forcing them teams to be good.
And playing quality football, like you say, and playing quality football. Exactly. They're not humping it along, looking to sort of, okay, we're winning games 1-0 and it's sort of keeping us there or thereabouts. They're not scared to still play.
And they've got a lot of character
and play
in that
quality
team.
Football.
They've come from behind a lot.
You could easily get to the last 3-4 games of the season and be a matter of 5-6 points between.
Yeah,
maybe
it could come down to goal difference.
It wouldn't surprise me one bit. To be fair, I think you still might get the first team.
I think the top three would be the usual contenders, but I think the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh
has been shown this season. It's that. It's wide open, not just for the title race, but for any position.
I think it's going to be a very exciting league this season.
Like you say, I think the only one that is going to be sewn up early on will be the relegation scrap.
Yeah, I agree. Well, overall, that concludes this week's review show. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Glad you could persevere with us, and we will get one out every week, and let us know what you think. And thank you very, very, very much for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. Again, I'm Chris, CTR on the forum. This is my man Daryl, known as Den's Gooner, is it, on the Arsenal forum?
Regular reader,
not so much a regular contributor, but
not
if you
so
know his football,
the moment.
If you know his football knowledge like I do, you can sort of understand that. So, okay then. Thank you very much all for listening, and we'll be hearing from us next week. Goodbye.